Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 317 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing good. I've decided to forego any sort of technical issues and so forth and poorly constructed emails from companies that offer recording software. And I'm just going with what's working these days until this doesn't work anymore.
That's right. They used Alan Moore's Shamed by You English. Do you remember that from the back of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
No.
You never heard about the League of Extraordinary, the original mini that got pulped, and they're worth a lot of money because it had the old newspapers in the back, and one of the articles was called Shamed by You English, and it was how to speak, and it was just broken English, like a English training course, and they're like, you can't do that.
Was that the reason it was pulped? I could have swore it was there was something else that they put in there that they didn't have rights to or something.
I thought it was Shamed by You English. And that, whatever it was, that was the beginning of Alan Moore's falling out with Wildstorm, because he was told, remember, that's when DC, he was told he could do anything at Wildstorm, and then DC bought Wildstorm, and then the corporate overlords came in, and I don't know if you know this, but Alan Moore doesn't like
this. This is actually mm-hmm. the real reason why. Thank you to recalledcomics.com, which I'll be checking out all day tomorrow.
Okay.
Is one of the ads in there.
Was a racist one.
No. It was an ad for a Marvel brand feminine product.
Okay.
It says the Society de Hygiene of France and the International Exhibition of blah, 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 blah. Assured these gold medals to Marvel Whirling Spray Syringes.
Mm.
And it was the Marvel Company, New Haven, Connecticut.
Gotcha.
And then they have pictures of what the Whirling Syringe looks like.
Okay.
Yes. And then they, when they reprinted it, they changed it from Marvel. Oh, no, actually, so then... then finally, here's the barely discernible newsprint headline from Top 10 Number 9, 4 months later, saying, Marvel, feminine product recall.
You know what? The Shamed by You English was in Alan Moore's 1963 series.
Mm.
So I'm mixing up two memories.
Interesting.
Okay.
You are very confused all the time.
I am.
Yes. So, we have stuff to talk about this week.
Do we really?
There is news to discuss. Lots of Marvel news, specifically about Iron Man and Civil War number 2. Mm. Do you know Civil War 2 allegedly is going to come out before the end of 2016, Todd?
I think it will. I'm holding hope.
We're going to delve a little bit deeper into that one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about a return of an indie comic on its 25th anniversary in a couple years. And we're also going to discuss the passing of legitimately one of the greatest artists in modern comics history.
Yes, a sad story.
We're also going to discuss the multitude of comic book conventions this weekend, a plethora of sales, and Todd, if you did not know it was Halloween, every single comic publisher is reminding you because they have all their horror stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't know that there was a movie coming out next weekend, the Marvel Digital Freebies will remind you of that as well.
And you know what's funny? I didn't know there was a movie coming out next week. It snuck up on me.
Oh, boy.
I completely forgot that it was next week.
Well, we'll talk about that when we talk about that. Mm-hmm. We also have what we read from this past week, and I think that's going to be Iron Man, or Infamous Iron Man number 1, Batman number 8, and Mighty Thor number 12.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what we're most looking forward to coming out this week, our best blank from this past week, which is best Ghost Rider, since we're talking about spooky, scary characters, since it is Halloween time, and we're going to get in discussion of the most recent episodes of The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and the season premiere return of The Walking Dead.
That's a lot of TV.
a lot of TV. And hey, folks, you've had a bit of a reprieve over the last 5 months of short episodes. Sorry about your luck. This one's probably going to be a long one, but we're not going to watch the clock. That just ain't my style, man.
That's right. We're not so many minutes in. I won't tell you the number.
So let's talk about Civil War first, just because I think this is a quick one to brush over. Right. So the next issue of Civil War number 6, comes out this week.
Today.
As this episode is hitting your ears, it is available for your purchase today.
Mm-hmm.
With the delays and everything else like that, issue 7 was originally scheduled for the last week of November, the 30th. But now all the stuff going out is saying that it's coming out on the 23rd. So it's coming out a week early. But we don't know that for sure.
They wouldn't lie.
Right. So if that does in fact come out on the 23rd, which there's a chance that it could, means that it might actually end before 2016 is over.
As long as he wrote that new ending, which is better than the old ending. Right.
However,
he's good to go.
If you ask me, I don't care if issue 7 comes out tomorrow as well. That issue 8 ain't coming out until January at the earliest.
I think it's going to come out before the end of the year because they want that for that fourth quarter bump.
Well, listen, fourth quarter bump notwithstanding, what better way to start off 2017 is with the last issue of your biggest storyline of all time?
That's not how people think. In business, that's not how they think. They want a big fourth quarter to end the year.
But right, but all of this is for moot because issue 7 was originally solicited to come out last week.
It's a little behind,
right?
But it'll all be fine. But hey, there's a lot of books spinning out of it, so we got that.
Right. Like, Infamous Iron Man, which we'll talk about a little bit later on today. As well as a new number one for Invincible Iron Man, I think still by the same creative team. I think it's still going to be done by Brian Michael Bendis as the writer, but it's going to be the new Iron Man who is taking over for Tony Stark in Riri Williams, who is a teenage girl prodigy who, with stealing parts from around her college, she made her own Iron Man armor.
And she's going to be Ironheart.
Right, Ironheart.
Remember?
Which I get a kick out of because it's one of those things where, like, here's a book that was solicited to come out in September. They delayed it as much as they could because, you know, the delays of Civil War II. And then the first, like, two or three issues, at the very least, the first two issues were solicited. And then all of a sudden, a new press release came out. They're like, oh, wait, let's call her Ironheart now. Because it very obviously was not part of the original plan.
You don't know that. You weren't in the office.
Right.
I think it was, and I think they're lucky they had that extra time so people could peruse over the variant covers.
Oh, so that's what we're going to get into is. So as the book is actually approaching its real release date, we're starting to see some of the variant covers that are coming out. And, you know, it's a big number one from Marvel, so there's always dozens and dozens of variant covers. And one of them was going to be done by J. Scott Campbell, and it was, as the internet informed me, was a very sexualized version of a 15-year-old girl on the cover of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Due to pressure from a lot of people being upset by this, Midtown Comics, who were going to release it, and Marvel have decided to pull that variant and no longer release that.
Mm-hmm. It goes to the variant cover cemetery along with the Batgirl cover from last year.
Right. Now, whether or not these were printed, whether or not a couple are going to slip out to drive up prices.
Oh.
Now, we're going to kind of get into this, and, you know, I have a feeling that Todd and I are going to have a very similar, unpopular take on all of this.
A hot take.
Right. And that is, of course, one, I am familiar as a reader of comic books of J. Scott Campbell's artwork. I think if I was to do a Bing search of J. Scott Campbell female, I would assume that he draws his females, whether it be Riri Williams, whether it be Fairchild of Gen 13, whether it be Mary Jane Watson, hell, I'll even say even Aunt May. He draws them all in a very similar style.
Yes.
And if you're hiring him to draw a cover of a female character, and you give them the style sheets of what this character is going to look like, and then this is what comes back, you cannot act surprised. That's like, I'm going to give a chef a bun, some lettuce, tomatoes, some burger meat, some bacon, ketchup, and so forth. And then when he brings me back a hamburger, I can't say, what is this? This isn't what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
The ingredients are there. This is what you get. And he's not the only one, but I think it's just because he's the most high-profile one. There was another variant cover by an artist named Jeff Deckel, who had her in a little bit less, I guess, posed of a pose, but wearing the same outfit and the same belly shirt and everything that, you know, was obviously approved. So it's not like J. Scott Campbell went into business for himself and said, hey, man, I'm going to put this girl in a belly shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that one didn't get as much blowback as the J. Scott Campbell one.
And I think it's just because of J. Scott Campbell's, you know, drawing style. Like, and mm-hmm. I'm past, you know, things that he's drawn that people, you know, say are a bit racy for, you know, women or whatever. Can you imagine if Cho had done the cover?
Well, again, it's not a news story for us to really delve too deep into, but I saw some comic convention in Italy is going to have a, you know, how to draw women panel with Frank Cho and that Milo Manara guy who had all
goodness.
The hubbub about that Spider-Woman cover.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mentioned it before, and we're off on a little bit of a tangent here, but that's quite all right. We've mentioned them before, but one of my favorite news sites that kind of, you know, kind of takes the seriousness that could come with comic book reporting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They did a write-up on it. Frank Cho, Milo Manara teaming up for a Comic-Con panel about women. when they approached Milo Manara for a quote, he said, "It's a me, Milo Manara," he told them. "I'm very excited to meet the Frank Cho and learn how he deals with the internet fans who don't like his drawings. Maybe he will draw me a sketch of a Spider-Gwen shouting, 'Outrager!'" Oh, Manara then excused himself from the interview, squatted on top of a large green pipe that serves as one of the many entrances to Italy's extensive subway systems, and disappeared into the pipe. Manara was later spotted doing battle with Italian politician King Koopa and his children over a princess he had kidnapped and was holding at one of his network of castles.
Oh my goodness. I was waiting for the... As soon as he said, "I'm a Milo Manara," I'm like, there's got to be a Mario thing in here somewhere.
Right. After rescuing the princess, Manara drew a picture of her writhing around on the ground wearing what appeared to be nothing but body paint. We'll keep you updated.
Oh my goodness.
Everybody takes themselves too seriously. We've discussed this before, as Todd mentioned about the Batgirl cover that was the homage to The Killing Joke. If you don't like what the subject matter or the way a variant cover looks, for whatever reason, it's the variant cover. No one is forcing you at knife point to buy it. This is the way that Marvel told them to draw her in this outfit. And again, of course, J. Scott Campbell draws as women. A little bit more, you know, I don't want to say sexualized because we're talking about a 15-year-old girl here. But, again, I wouldn't buy that cover because I'm not a huge fan of J. Scott Campbell's work.
I wasn't either, but you know what? You know what? You know what the problem is, Joe? We're not 15-year-old girls, so we don't know.
And, again, when I have to preface it by saying this is a joke. I'm saving up all of my Amazon click-through money so that I can become a 15-year-old girl.
Wow.
I know, and again, that is a joke. I'm not really doing that, nor am I making light of other people who... so on and so forth.
Right, so...
So anything else I didn't cover with this regarding your feelings about this? I know you felt strongly about it because you emailed me over the weekend about it.
How can you tell when I feel strongly about a story? Because I show some interest in the show when it happens.
When an email has attachments from you, I know I'm in trouble.
I've done some work.
You took the time to download an image, insert it into an email, and then send that email to another person, preferably me.
Well, here's the thing, because I'm going to touch on it a little bit, is where people were talking about the way she was dressed. And I was like, this wasn't the first image of her in that outfit.
Right.
This wasn't. So you don't get to use that in your argument.
Yeah, this is like the fifth.
Yeah, the fifth image. So it's got to be, the history of J. Scott Campbell. And then people are fine with it, and then we find, or not fine with it, and then we find out that somebody else is doing, and this is why I sent you that link, was doing another variant cover with her in that outfit.
Right.
Sitting at a coffee, a coffee house having coffee, and I'm like, well, there's that outfit again. We got to start yelling about it.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I just thought it was a lot of hubbub about something that wasn't like the way it was made to sound was pornographic, and it wasn't. I don't know. But that's me. I'm
right.
Staying
and
out
other people always say this is like, well, if you're jumping to those conclusions about this, that, the other thing being sexualized or pornographic, then that's because you have those thoughts, and that's what you're putting on everyone else. No. What this boils down to, in my opinion, is everyone's just got a lot of free time on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
They should all do a podcast if they're not already doing one.
Yeah, everybody do a podcast about your feelings on comics.
Right. I don't vent a lot about comic books because I know I have a podcast that I'm going to record and I can get it all out there. Unless it's something that really, really is sticking in my craw and I'll send it out. But then again, that's more or less a note for me to remember that I talk about it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get too outraged about stuff, and I think we've talked about this before. Maybe it's because we're old white men, Todd, but, mm-hmm. It's a comic book.
And Joe, we have beards.
Oh, my goodness. The worst white men of them all, bearded white men.
Yeah, we are. Have a beard, must die. But,
you know what?
That's why Dollar Shave Club does so well.
Oh, my goodness. That's, again, I used my Dollar Shave Club razor to side hustle myself.
Oh, are you a side hustler now?
That's right. Well, I'm a front hustler, side hustler, back hustler. I'm a 2016 version of Fred Garvin, so.
I'm just letting you know, I'm an up hustler.
Okay.
All you people are lateral hustling while I'm escalating hustling, okay?
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So last bit of news, of course, it was announced at a comic book convention in Paris, which somehow did not show up on my list when I try to find these things. So they did a good job of hiding it.
You got to go to that Eurocon list.
Oh, boy. I get Canada ones, and every once in a while, a South American one will trickle in.
Mm-hmm.
And a UK one. But Paris, that's a little too out of my realm. We were discussing Reed Pop last week. And I see they're doing all these conventions like Abu Dhabi and all this sort of stuff. I'm like, oh, that's out of my purview.
What? Paris is not.
I still haven't drafted up that email yet about us pitching us doing the award show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm going to just pitch it to the big ones first just to see if Hawaii wants to.
My goodness.
Fly it out to Hawaii.
I could see us getting off the plane, getting laid, and going, aloha, oi. Oh, my God. The video would be fantastic.
That's right. Because when you look at Todd and myself, you're like, beach guys there. Those are guys who really like the sun and the fun.
But how great would all our promo shots of us in Hawaiian shirts be? Oh, my goodness. All the ladies with the grass skirt. I got my mower ready.
Oh, wow. This is the non-explicit tag, Todd. Let's reel it in.
And just, I know.
Over there, they're just called shirts.
Oh, that's right. It's like Chinese food in China.
Right. It's just called food.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Terry Moore, renowned indie creator, is stating that his creation that kind of kickstarted his career is going to be coming back in 2018, and that is Stranger Than Paradise, which is probably one of the first indie book, truly indie books that I read.
Yeah. You know what? I'd have to say me too.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was because it was the time where they bounced, from whoever they were being, maybe self-published or something, but then they went to Image for a while.
Was it like Abstract or Arctic? Yes, Abstract.
Right. Well, Abstract is his publishing arm, and I think it was at Antarctic Press.
Okay, that's what it was.
And moved from Antarctic to Image, and then he started to self-publish it. Like, I think it was under the Homage imprint at Image.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Homage got picked up by DC, then he went back to do his own self-publishing thing.
Right.
But, yeah, Strange in Paradise is a book that is, you know, by all accounts, not my kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it is, it's really, really good.
The art's amazing.
Yes.
That first miniseries is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Then the ongoing is really good. And full disclosure, at some point I had to leave because it jumped the shark.
Okay.
But I never finished it, but a lot of the early stuff is amazing.
This is one of those books because I was picking it up. You know, it took a very long time to come out because when it was being self-published, he, you know, was taking his time between issues. And there was the first miniseries, then there was 12 issues, and then there was the next run that went like 75 issues.
That's where it goes off the rails.
Okay. It like doesn't go off through. The rails in that 75 issue run till about like issue like 35, 40-ish.
I want to say it's a little before that. It's when you find out that David is a billionaire that's been programmed to kill. And he gives Kachu and Francine $1 billion. And Francine's like, oh, I'm going to hide it from my boyfriend because I don't want him to know we have $1 billion. And I was like, all right, this is all too far for me. This is all too far. But before that, amazing.
Okay, so right, you're correct. That was like around like issue 20 something or other.
Yes, that's where it loses me because I don't really see it. That book was more real life and stuff like that. And there was a scene where, you know, somebody attacks David and he just snaps, kills him. And it's like, oh my God. And then, like I said, you find out that he was hypnotized to be an assassin or something like that. And you're like, all right, this is so far from what Strangers in Paradise is that I couldn't do it. You know what I mean?
It was still enjoyable, but by that point, I think like I got April involved in reading it as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was still picking it up more so for her to read. I did read the whole thing, but it doesn't, like, those later issues don't stick with me as much as, like, those first three, the next 12, and, like, the next 20-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like those issues very much. Those are very strong. Strong enough that I'm excited that this book is making a return.
Me too.
So that's good news in the world of comics. More good news in the world of comics. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 conventions this weekend. And they are all over the world. And by world, I mean the greater North America area.
What? No Paris?
Nothing that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got your comic book conventions. There's the Albany Comic Con in Albany, New York. With such folks there as Steve Orlando, Mike McCone, lateral friend of the show, and Ron Mars, Fantasticon in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Mike Grell and William Messner Loebs are going to be there. Richmond, though, is Richmond Comic Con. That's Richmond, Virginia. Is the I would say the biggie if you're looking at actual comic book stuff. Tom King is going to be there. Mark Waid, Denny O'Neill, and those like people.
It's going to be the what con?
Like, that's your comic con.
That's the biggie?
That's the biggie.
Not the Kofi or Xavier?
No.
Okay.
Speaking of professional wrestlers, and it's you mentioned the New Day, at the Central Canada Comic Book Convention, William Shatner is going to be there. Tia Carrere is going to be there. And an Axe and Smash of Demolition.
You know, out of all three, I would want to meet Tia Carrere.
I would want to meet Smash, not so much Axe. You know what? You would want to meet Smash as well, Todd.
Why?
Smash is a gentleman by the name of Barry Darso, giving up kayfabe here, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
He has played many roles in the world of professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Crusher Darso, Crusher Khrushchev, a golfer guy whose name escapes me, the Blacktop Bully, but you, Todd, would know Demolition Smash better as the Repo Man.
All right, Repo Man. I would get a Mark photo with him and Tia Carrera.
Okay, that I'm well, sure their booths are right next to each other.
While the Shatner just leans in. That's what I want. How much for a lean in from Shatner? Not all of Shatner, just a lean in.
How much of his real hair?
That's right. His realistic non-fake hair.
Yes. So also in LA is the Stan Lee Los Angeles Comic Con. That's your big media one. You've got like every living member of Star Trek is going to be there. Every living member of the Batman 66 TV show is going to be there, and Rob Liefeld.
Oh my goodness, great guy.
Rob is the man. Rob is and we're not being facetious. We're not being sarcastic. Rob is an awesome person. If you're at a convention and Rob Liefeld is there, regardless of what you've heard or read, your feelings about his art, just go up to him and talk to him. He's a nice guy. MegaCon in Tampa Bay, Florida has Wallace Shawn and Henry Winkler as the top guests, at least in my opinion.
Mm. He was the Fonz.
Not Wallace Shawn. Imagine if Wallace Shawn was the Fonz. I bet you'd go a little something like this. You were about to say you don't know who Wallace Shawn is.
I don't know who Walla Shawn is.
I don't remember the name of the character that he plays in The Princess Bride. But he's the guy who says, inconceivable.
Oh, he's the Ferengi from he's the Grand Nagus from Deep Space Nine. I know who you're talking about.
That sounded a little dirty, but anyway.
It does. And this is the one that gets the non-explicit tag, right? Right. So I can't say Grand Nagus.
Said it again.
Ugh.
But the biggie, if you're a media person, this is the Alamo City Comic-Con. Remember the Alamo. Todd, listen to this lineup of guests.
Murderer's Row, I bet. Go ahead.
David Tennant.
Ooh!
Charlie Cox.
Wow.
John Barenthal.
Woof!
Margot Kidder.
Wow.
Dennis Rodman.
On the rebound, I guess. Go ahead.
Zach Galligan.
Mm.
David Faustino.
Oh my God, Married with Children.
Married with Children's David Faustino.
Mm-hmm.
Sting, and not the singer, the professional wrestler. But I bring that up because most importantly, also at the Alamo City Comic Con, Ralph Macchio and William Zabka. Now, Todd, I don't know if you saw the picture I posted this past week on Twitter, where professional wrestler Rob Van Dam himself, a big name in the world of professional wrestling, he himself went and got a Mark picture with William Zabka and Ralph Macchio.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be trolling the internet and hashtags to see which celebrities there get a Mark photo with them this weekend. Just mm-hmm. so I could rub it in anyone's face who had the same opportunity and passed it up.
So, who would do that? Not me.
A monster. A literal monster would do that. Now, if only the guy who played Kreese was there, I'd also want to get a Mark picture with him.
Mm. You're crazy, son.
Listen. It's the Karate Kid. Come on.
Wouldn't you get a picture with David Tennant, the Purple Man?
If only he was paint, I would only ask him questions. I go, I saw your acting debut in the Jessica Jones TV show. When That's are you right. going to do something else? And he why are you standing near this blue garbage can?
He was in the movie with the Are You a Wizard Harry at some point, wasn't he? Wasn't he in one of the You're a Wizard Harry movies?
I sleep through all those movies.
Oh. Or go play Double Dragon out in the... The
Cowboys
lobby.
Of the Mumesa, and it was The Matrix.
That's right.
If only a theater I went to had a legitimate arcade, so that I could just like sneak out while my wife and the rest of my family are watching their terrible Harry Potter movies. I'm like, I'm gonna go play video games for 9.5 hours. How long is this movie?
That's what it feels like.
So anyway, links to all these conventions, if any of these sound interesting to you or you're going to be in the area of any of these, are all going to be in the show notes, as well as all the information about all the other shows in the soon-to-be-named network, which you could find at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. You can go check out Podvocacy. After a six-week absence, David and Jason are back, talking about a variety of things, including some of the TV shows that we don't cover here, your Gothams, your Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., things of that nature. And David, I also want to thank you for the kind words that you said about me and my recent change of life that I went through. You could also listen to Profane Argument and Puzzle Warriors 3, who have actually been experimenting with doing live broadcasts, streaming on YouTube as they record the show. I think Profane Arguments do them on Tuesday nights, or Puzzle Warriors 3 do them on Wednesday nights. So certainly check those two things out. Prodigal Sons podcast is back to their kind of sort of normal schedule, and Jared of the Prodigal Sons had a plethora of crazy stories just within the last week. I can't mention what he's been up to on this show, but let's just say in popular vernacular, it usually goes along with drinking, gambling, and blank.
Oh, boy.
Right.
The blank is the important part.
Yes, the blank is the important part. Fresher in parlance, I hope they come back. I miss them. I know Prime Defective is back after being off for a couple months talking about Star Trek The Next Generation. And again, of course, Talking Gimmicks, the latest addition to our family, talking all things wrestling, past, present, and future. Postulations on which member of the World Wrestling Entertainment might be someone getting their Make-A-Wish granted. And talking about an old ECW show that I am prominently featured in the crowd on, especially in crisp high definition.
Oh boy, which is your friend.
Uh-huh. Well, listen. Listen, Todd, 19 years ago, I hadn't hit the wall yet.
No, but you were scraping it a bit.
I was steering into it.
That's right. I think you were scraping a little bit. We're getting a lot of sparks on this side, Dad.
So check out these and all the other shows in the soon-to-be-named network. Also check out all the different sales and freebies that are going on. If you like comic books but don't like to pay a lot for them, IDW is having a bunch of their horror stuff on sale, and that includes everything from adaptations of True Blood, 30 Days of Night, and all things in between. Vertigo is having a sale on American Vampire, the Scott Snyder book that kind of brought Scott Snyder to prominence, so definitely check that out. Archie is having a sale on all of their horror-themed stuff, and that you can't beat that stuff with a stick, that Archie, Afterlife with Archie and the Sabrina stuff. That's some real good comics there.
Mm-hmm.
The Marvel Zombie stuff by Robert Kirkman and many others who picked up the mantle afterwards. And of course, speaking of Robert Kirkman, who I'm sure will come up later on, Walking Dead is on sale as well from Image Comics, whether you want to get them in quote-unquote collections or whether you want to get them in single issues. I think they have every issue available up to not this month's issue, but last month's issue is mm-hmm. part of the sale.
Good deal.
Marvel has some new freebies up. They have the first issue of the Reimagining of the Clone Saga, and to kind of go alongside that is the first issue of the Scarlet Spider book, where Kane, who was the messed up clone of Peter Parker, took on the mantle of the Scarlet Spider, as well as the Doctor Strange prelude for the upcoming film, and New Avengers Annual Number 1, which is a Doctor Strange heavy issue.
Mm-hmm.
So Doctor Strange is coming out next week, Todd.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if and when I'll get a chance to see it, sadly.
Oh, why?
I am out of town Friday and Saturday for Root Beer Wrestling, as you like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who I will be traveling with yet, and there's a slim chance that I might be able to steal away in between the two shows and see it by myself, which, you know, is a prospect of a thing that could happen.
Oh, don't tell your wife.
You know what? I've been doing such a good job of training myself to avoid anything about movies I want to see. I don't know if she knows the movie is coming out,
mm-hmm.
only because the Doctor Strange stuff has only been hitting, like, night and late night TV so far.
And doesn't your wife watch General Hospital?
No, she doesn't watch General Hospital, which we talked about last week, where they ham-fistedly put that plug in there. But, like, when Suicide Squad came out earlier this summer, the week before it came out, the cast, Will Smith, Margot Robbie, etc., were on every talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really being crammed down the throat. So I'm sure next week is when Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, and the rest of the cast is going to hit the daytime talk show circuit.
Right.
And that's when my wife will be reminded that Doctor Strange is a thing.
Okay. I'm probably going next Thursday.
Oh, that's right. You go to that fancy late night show.
Well, they're not late. They're usually like 8 o'clock.
That's late. That's not that.
Oh, that's true. You're an old man. But
I should be in bed now.
You should be.
Yeah. So, that's all the digital sales. That's all the freebies. That's our plans for Doctor Strange. Let's get into what we read from this past week. Todd, I'm leaving it up to you. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I think a lot of the fans would like to know what my feelings are on Infamous Iron Man 1. So I say we start with Batman, I Am Suicide Part 1.
Oh, man. Got to sweep those quarter hours, man.
That's right. I figured I'd tease that. Batman, I Am Suicide by Tom King. And I'm trying to get the last name right so I don't butcher it. It is Mikkel Janin.
I would say that's correct.
And basically in the past, you know, storyline, Dr. Hugo Strange was using Psycho Pirate to do things, and he infected Gotham Girl with fear. So, and then he traded Psycho Pirate to Bane for some venom, and Bane has Psycho Pirate, who Batman needs to help Gotham Girl. So he's on this mission. He's going on this mission for Amanda Waller, and he has to recruit some of his team, so he goes to Arkham to get the team, and we see a few members, and there's a surprise one towards the end. I love this issue. I've been loving Batman, as we've discussed, back and forth between Detective and this, and this issue was intense as Batman is going through Arkham, and he's talking with the Doctor, and he's meeting the people that he needs. And it's like, what I love about this is Tom King makes just walking through Arkham and with the inmates yelling to Batman, stuff like that, just a creepy, creepy event. And I can't get enough of the new Batman book.
Okay. This is really good. Tom mm-hmm. King is a great writer. He's doing a great job on this Batman book. There's a team building thing, but essentially Batman building a team of villains. It's mm-hmm. essentially him building his own Suicide Squad, hence the title right. of this, I Am Suicide. They do a good tease in the last two or three pages where they make you think that he's choosing X, and then he chooses someone else, which kind of raises a whole bunch of other questions, because they are attributing to this person a bunch of murders as well.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is falsely accused in my mind, but okay. We'll see.
Right, so that was like, to me. For me, however, the true thing that I have to talk about in this book is and the I art. Think it,
okay.
Mikkel Janin's art. Now, I've seen him in other stuff. He was the artist on Tim Seeley's Grayson. He was also the artist on the back half of Justice League Dark, amongst other things. I have never seen his work look so beautiful as I have in this book.
Right.
I was blown away by this art. Like, the whole time I'm reading this, I'm like, why have I never seen this artist before? Who is this guy? And I'm going nuts. And I'm like, I've seen him do other stuff. I have these issues. And it's being colored in ink just so ever so slightly different than he was before. And whatever they're doing now is making a world of difference. This is some of the most beautiful art I've seen in a comic book in as long as I can remember.
I agree, and I think it's the coloring, because he's inking himself, and I think he inked himself before. Right. But it's, I think it's the coloring, and I've always joked, and I think it was even a title of an episode many, many moons ago, was colorists are the new inkers. They can make or break you. Mm-hmm. And Jun Chung on the colors is making Mikkel, just making. And the opening scene of Bane talking is fantastic. And it, he makes it ultimately creepy of the, you know, his life in the jail. And then there's a shot of Psycho Pirate's face that is just menacing. And I don't know, like that, like you don't, if you don't read those first, I don't know, six pages and aren't immersed in the feel of this book because of the artist, I don't know what to tell you. Give up reading comics.
Right. So this is really good. Don't be taken aback by a crossover, it being issue 9, whatever. This is the beginning of a new storyline. I absolutely suggest checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess next we're going to talk about Mighty Thor number 12.
That's right.
Okay, Mighty Thor number 12, written by Jason Aaron, with some of the art done by Russell Dodderman. And who is the other artist on this?
I'm looking now. Russell Dodderman. And all I see is just color artist Matthew Wilson.
Okay.
And Fraser Irving was the color. Oh, no, he did art on the old Asgard. That's what he did. So it was artist of the present day story was Russell Dodderman, and old art of old Asgard, the flashback story was Fraser Irving.
Right. So this is essentially the origin of Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially how Odin fought a storm. And what was it? The piece of rock? What was it again?
The Uru.
The Uru was given to him by the dwarves.
Mm-hmm. Which he...
Go ahead.
Which he absolutely adored when they gave it to him.
Right, right.
Oh my god, old Odin is a jerk. Or past Odin.
Is... Now, and again, it did bring back to me many feelings of old Thor in the previous God of Thunder book.
Like father, like son.
Yes. So this is essentially how he crafts the hammer, how he decides to wield the hammer. He can't wield the hammer. Then he's going to give it to Thor, then decides not to give it to Thor, and then Thor, of course, gets it. And mm-hmm. This is just kind of like, one, it's a cute little story, but two, it's also kind of leading into whatever the next big arc for Thor is.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this issue a lot, but it's a Jason Aaron penned comic, so yeah.
The thing that I like about it is being a fan of old mythology stories, you know, with, you know, being the, you know, the cool kid like I was playing Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. You know, you'd learn the old mythologies and from watching old like movies and comics. It was the way they forged it and the way Jason Aaron like tells the story. Like they couldn't do this, and they had the bellows on the furnace so much that the mountain around them was melting, and that didn't work. So they roped down a sun. It just gets in that like crazy mythology stuff that people do to make things, like, you know, how Paul Bunyan carved the Grand Canyon, anything like that. It's just so over the top. And then the dialogue that he was using to like describe it, like, for days the clanging rang like thunder until every tool in whatever the name of the town was, I can't make that, was shattered and every dwarf exhausted. And you're like, just amazing. And then, like you said, it gets to the end and it preludes what's coming. And the old librarian from the original God of Thunder is just talking about how all God stories begin and end the same. And as he goes on and on, and there's like just, you know, gloom and doom coming. It reminds me of, you know, it's just foreboding of nothing good happening. And you feel like this is not going to end well any way, shape, or form with a couple of sentences. And Jason Aaron's, you know, he's a good writer, as we always say.
He's a master of that sort of thing. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I rambled there for a minute, but I loved it. So.
Yes. So last but not least, Infamous Iron Man number 1, written by mm-hmm. Brian Michael Bendis with art by Alex Maleev. Dr. Doom is taking over for Iron Man. He's going to be the new Iron Man.
Right.
even though we just had a news story earlier before that Riri Williams is going to be the new Iron Man, but I guess because she's called Iron Heart, it's not the same thing.
And as I said last week, this is spinning out of the thrilling conclusion of Civil War 2.
Right. So they spoil the end of Civil War in this without really spoiling it.
Mm-hmm.
But they do spoil it. And I thought this was okay. It was a very light read. This definitely felt like something of the first chapter of something that would read better in a trade.
Mm-hmm.
It neither good nor bad, just kind of a book that I read. I will say this, though. I do want Alex Maleev to draw the Thing all the time.
Right.
His Ben Grimm just looked so cool. And I'm a bit of a, like, I'm a bit of an art guy of like, oh, this art is beautiful. Where a lot of times I don't really mark out so much for the art, but man, like that shot of him that he drew of the Thing is so cool.
It makes him look huge and you know.
Right, how the Thing should look and feel.
Right.
Like you felt a presence of the Thing in that page.
He loomed large in that panel.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, Todd, you allegedly have a hot take on this, so
the
floor is yours.
Okay. So, you know me, I'm a fan. I was a fan of the new Doctor Doom in Invincible Iron Man, right? I had no problem with it, no the take on it. So I like this. He shows up to help someone with Diablo, who's like the 19th rate Fantastic Four villain. So I like that and the way he discussed, and he becomes the new Iron Man, obviously, spoiler alert. And I really liked it. If you don't like a Bendis book, and if you're gonna complain you find Bendis books boring, you're not gonna like.
Right, and this is kind of like we talked about before with the J. Scott Campbell thing. It's like, hey, are you going to be offended by a J. Scott Campbell cover? Have you never seen anything that he's drawn over the last 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is the same way. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it because that's the way I am. And then they throw a tail on the end, which is one of my favorite, like the cliffhanger of the character who shows up. And they're like, oh, like, you know, the person you know is doing this stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. The history of Dr. Doom, that's one of my favorite aspects. I have to see where this goes. But this book was a really high on me, for me. But then I, you know, with those first couple of pages, it knocks it down because I want that book. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Where Doom is with the Illuminati.
Oh, no, they were the Cabal.
Well, I like when they were called the Illuma, spelled N-A-U-G, like the Illuminati.
Oh.
That's what they were called for a while. But they're the Cabal. I want that. If I get classic Doom in flashbacks throughout the book, like if Bendis can work it in that flashback things, have relevance to the current things, I'm really going to like it. If he had left classic Doom out of it altogether, I might have liked this book really more, but it hurts my soul what we could have over what we got, if that makes any sense.
It does.
But my thing is, when someday when Marvel has their ducks in a row with Fantastic Four, to see this Doom crumble when Richards comes back is going to be fantastic. Like all this stuff. He's like, yeah, you know what? Richards is gone. So this is what I believe. That's why he's like this. As soon as Richard puts his stretchy little foot back on Earth, it's over.
He'll feel the disturbance in the Doom Force.
That's right. He'll be like, say what? You don't think Doom would do that?
Yes, because why not make every character a sassy teenager?
That's right.
Oh, man. But yeah, I'm still going to stick with this. You know, obviously you mentioned the beginning of the book, the throwbacks to what he was doing, I guess, during Siege with these characters. Mm-hmm. And of course, the cliffhanger at the end. I'm all about it, but this just felt a little bit light. And I'm not complaining about it, of course, as you mentioned. It's a Bendis book. More times than not, it's going to feel light just because it is going toward the trade. But, you know, if there is a book that I could see getting moved down the pile or checked off, if the next issue or two are not home runs, I could certainly see that happening.
Yes. I don't know how long I'll stick with a Victor Von Doom book. We'll have to see.
Right. It could be a day or it could be forever. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in between there.
Pretty much.
So, we've talked about what we're most looking forward to, or what we read from this past week. Now let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. Every week around 5:30 Eastern time or so. We got a little early this week.
Yes.
We put up the pull post, a link to a link at longboxheroes.com to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you're getting your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them mailed to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed. Know what's coming out, so there's no surprises. I hate surprises.
You do.
I hate change. I hate surprises. So Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is still in the lead by one with 26 correct guesses. I have 25 correct guesses. And we are attempting to look to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I'm going to do a knee-jerk reaction and say the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Saga number 39.
Sure. Is the same thing with you? Let's just get it over
with. It certainly is.
That's right.
Now, I will say this. We will more than likely not be talking about Saga 39 next week.
Right.
Possibly just a kind of follow-up from last time that we talked about it. There was a couple little spoilery things that we didn't dive into too much. I could certainly see us talking about Civil War number 6. I could see us absolutely possibly talking about Flash or Hal Jordan, Green Lantern. Maybe the last issue of All New, All Different Avengers. Possibly the last issue of Vision number 12. If Saga was not out, Vision number 12 would have been my most looking forward to book.
Right.
That is so good. I cannot stress that enough. I'm sad to see that book go.
Right.
But Saga, man. Saga's top of the food chain.
That's right. But, you know, alas, it'll probably be always be the book that we're looking forward to, unless there's some weird thing coming out.
Right, some sort of weird anomaly. Someone needs to go back and check the tape to see if there was ever a time where Saga was not the most looking forward to book. I think you might have done it once.
I think it might have been something to do with back in the day with God of Thunder, when I was like really into God of Thunder. I love Mighty Thor, but God of Thunder was so up my alley.
Yep.
So
while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, past weekly questions, past poll posts. Everything is collected there, handy-dandily, across the top in all those little tabs, as well as our fancy little store where you can purchase shirts and stickers featuring our fantastic logo done up by our good friend Tom Derenick. Even further up on the page is our Amazon link. Anything that you need to purchase through Amazon, and there's still time to get a Halloween costume delivered if you have Prime, and I hope you have Prime because Prime is awesome. Any little bit that you purchase through Amazon helps us immensely. We're not going to give you the big, long spiel like a lot of other podcasts that I listen to do. There are podcasts I listen to, Todd, that I enjoy immensely.
Mm-hmm.
Where their Amazon stuff is almost as long as our After Darks.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's too long.
That is too long.
Our After Darks are too long.
Yes. So people have purchased comics this past week, of course, and I do like to see that people have figured out how to connect their Comixology and their Amazon accounts and then connect all that to help us out, and we do greatly appreciate that. People have purchased stuff like Transformers comics, the most recent issues of I Hate Fairyland, stuff like that. And someone also purchased a Blu-ray of a film called The Fifth Wave, which I have no idea what it is, but thank you very much for purchasing it.
I know nothing about this fifth wave you speak of.
Neither do I. So, lastly, before we get into TV talk, let's get into our weekly question, which is our best blank, which is the best iteration of Ghost Rider. We had a couple people make suggestions, citing the more recent Jason Aaron run. And I say more recent Jason Aaron run. It was like 3 runs ago, but still. And John Siler jokingly said, Nick Cage and Spirit of Vengeance. Now, the only thing that I enjoy about Ghost Rider, either one of those terrible films, is in the press junket for the second one, Spirit of Vengeance,
mm-hmm.
when Nick Cage was, you know, he was doing the interviews and everything else like that, he would talk about how when they were filming the scenes, because of course, Todd, he didn't really have a flaming skull.
He didn't?
No.
Wow.
They would put it in post. They would CGI it in. But he would paint his face up like a skull. And he talked about on one of the location shoots, they were in a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
And he said when he had his face painted up, the children of the town that they were in really thought that he was the real Ghost Rider.
I believe that.
You believe that Nick Cage said that? You believe that Nick Cage thought that happened? Or you believe that that really happened?
All three.
Okay. I don't.
All three. Why would I doubt Nick Cage?
Oh, I've got a plethora of reasons, and so does the IRS.
He's, well, that's, you, then you don't believe Nick Cage is an accountant. There's a difference. Don't be thrusting dishonesty on Nick Cage when should be thrusting on his accountant.
Fair enough. So what is, I guess, what would you consider the best iteration of Ghost Rider?
It is Johnny Blaze.
Right.
And my favorite Ghost Rider story is from issue 68, where Johnny Blaze goes to a confessional to tell his origin. Like that's the gist of the story, is he's telling his story. He's confessing his story to this priest, and this priest is freaking out, and it's like this Twilight Zone-y story where you find out he's telling the story, like, you know, I sold my soul, I did this, Mephisto, you know, screwed me over, gave him the old, you know, Beelzebub screw job.
Right.
But as this goes, you find out, and he's like, and then the end of the story is, and until I came to this town and I ran into somebody dying in the gutter, and he said he was a priest, and he said that you murdered him and took his clothes, and you find out that the guy in the confessional is really a murderer, and it's this like really great story of the origin with the twist ending and everything, which I always thought would have made the perfect Ghost Rider movie, and they, alas, they never used it.
Maybe they'll work it in with Ghost Rider appearing on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
You mean Ghost Driver.
Right, and I did put that in the post as well.
I know, I read it.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I knew you were making fun of me. I always read what you post, because I want to see that you're not making me look weak in these posts.
Oh, brother, gotta make Todd look strong, brother.
That's right.
So, for me, it's the Jason Aaron, the last miniseries that he did, the Heavens on Fire miniseries, because that's, like, through his run on the book, and his run on the book is only, if you count the miniseries and the other stuff, of course, it's, you know, just a little bit under 20 issues, but it's all really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that last six-issue miniseries that he did is really where everything from those previous issues just kind of all builds up, and it's just like, as it's called, it says Heavens on Fire, it should be called All Hell's Breaking Loose.
Wow, because it's every
crazy concept, every crazy idea, and this is, you know, a little bit more where he gets into some of the sillier, and I say that in the best way possible, other Ghost Riders that there were, like there was a truck driver who was a Ghost Rider and all these other things. It's really good, it's really fun, and it's kind of a book that I wish was still being published in that way, but I'll take all the other Jason Aaron stuff that he puts out that is so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you for everyone who checked out the post, who left a recommendation, talked about Ghost Rider, whatever it was. Next week, we're going to be talking about the best iteration of Etrigan the Demon.
Ooh.
Begone leave your tweet or comment on the webpage in rhyme if you would like.
That's right. You know who made the rhymes?
Wasn't that Alan Moore?
That's right. The one thing I don't like about Etrigan, Alan Moore did. He's the only good character that Jack Kirby made at DC.
Not a fan of OMAC?
No. That was cool when Jack did him. Not until somebody else came along and made him cool. Like Darkseid was goofy, and then when he was in Legion, he was better. But Demon, right out of the gate, cool character.
Gotcha. So leave a comment, let us know, all that sort of jazz. And we'll talk about it all here next week. I guess that ends this part of the show. We are going to dive deep into some TV talk.
Mm-hmm. No and shallow end of TV talk here. We're diving in the deep end.
Exactly. So we'll give everyone a couple seconds. If you need to hit the bricks, don't care, whatever, or you don't want things spoiled. But I think by this point, a majority of the things, especially the Walking Dead stuff, has probably been spoiled on you. But if you've made it this far, kudos, I say. Kudos to you.
They killed everybody.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll get to Walking Dead a little bit later. Let's get into Flash first.
Mm-hmm.
So Flash is, we find another one of the people that came through from whatever that timeline that Barry created was.
Flashpoint.
Flashpoint. And whatever. And that is
whatever.
That is Magenta. Now, I will say this. The A story on this did not thrill me. And I think a lot of it was carried on the young lady who was playing Magenta. I did not think she was a very good actress. However, the B and C stories were strong enough that I was okay with all of that. Because Dr. Wells is back. Yay. One of the best characters on any TV show in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because his daughter, Jessie, who got superpowers when they were on Earth 1, they're from Earth 2. She wants to learn how to better use her powers. He is clandestinely trying to prevent her from doing so. Of course, Caitlin, he implores Caitlin to do so, and she is keeping the secret that she has powers, as though she has all the Killer Frost stuff, but again, is keeping it a secret. Also, Wally is upset that he doesn't have powers, and is attempting to do everything that he can to get powers.
Hmm. Okay.
Or figure out how to get his powers to activate, I guess, because he was in the accelerator thing. The accelerator explosion that they redid at the end of season 2, he didn't get powers, but he thinks he should have them.
And what if he finds out that he had them, and he was taken away by Barry? He's not going to like Barry anymore.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. I'm the same as you. I thought the Magenta storyline was okay, but... like you said, it leaned heavy on not such a great actress, but the whole thing of it is because in my head I'm dream writing the series where Magenta was a girlfriend with Wally, so
right.
And ended up she went her manifestations ended up hating Wally, so I think there's a whole story there. Like I could see her either being interested in Wally and him not being interested in her and making her mad, or her fixating on Kid Flash and him not, you know, liking her back. And I don't know. So that's why I kind of like the story that because I saw potential there, but I see what you mean by she's not a great actor. I'm going to take the Wally thing first. I thought Wally was a whiny little baby this whole episode.
Aww.
And when he jumped out in front of the car, I was like, I'm out on Wally. I can't stand Wally anymore. I was like, you literally jumped out in front of a car. And I like when they talked to him, they were like, what was going to happen if Jesse wasn't there? I don't know. I should have had super speed. And I'm like, dumbest thing ever. but Jesse Quick and Wells, I loved, and I may have popped a little bit when he said, run, Jesse, run. I was like, that's pretty sweet. You know, in the vein of run, Barry, run. I was like, I like this. So it was a little from column A, a little from column B on this episode.
I do just want to close this out here by saying the actress who plays Magenta in the show
mm-hmm.
is a young lady by the name of Joey King, which is funny because that is a friend of very close to a friend of mine's wrestling name in Canada. His name is Joey Kings, plural.
Ah.
They look nothing alike.
They don't, but I bet they're both crazy.
He's up to some stuff.
Aha.
He's up to some things. He's a good guy. I miss his podcast.
Who doesn't?
So, Legends of Tomorrow, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
We're in 1942. It's the JSA. They run like a well-oiled machine, and our legends don't have a rudder. They're rudderless. Who will lead them? And this is how we find out who leads them. They leave because the JSA thinks they're crazy, but then, of course, who's our new character? What's that dude's name? Nate Haywood.
Mm-hmm.
He's Commander Steele's grandson.
Right.
And his dog tag disappears, so, like, we gotta go back. Something happened. And, of course, there's the scene in the nightclub where Dr. Stein has to sing. then there's, like, the big fight and everything else like that. Of course, people get shot. There's people getting blown up. All sorts of things are happening. What did you think of this one?
Don't forget about juicing Nazis, by the way.
Okay,
too.
Well, I was saving that.
Right. So what I loved about it was the JSA. Some of the greatest stuff in there. I liked going to the cabaret, the Nazi cabaret, and that's where it falls apart a little bit, because I like the idea of the well-oiled machine meeting the ragtag group, and it's kind of like, you know, like, maybe, like, something changed. Well, maybe you coming back or changed. He's like, well, I didn't think of that. And he goes on. But the whole plan where it's like, well, we got to get close to him. Well, I just happen to look like Hitler's favorite singer. I'm like, wait a minute. When was this established? When was this groundwork laid? This is really some hand of God stuff right there. And I'm like, okay, the whole thing where he could sing in German, they explain that he has the translator, so I'm fine with that. But he can sing, fine. I'm even fine with, like, oh, he could secretly sing. No one would expect Stein to sing. But the fact that Martin Stein just knows, I'm up on Hitler's famous favorite singers, and everybody was always like, hey, Dr. Stein, do you know you look like Hitler's favorite singer? I get that all the time. All the time. So I was like, that's ridiculous. And the other part that kind of annoyed me was when Vixen's like, hey, what are you without that suit? You know, you're nothing but a genius billionaire playboy. Ma'am, without the amulet, what are you? Well, I know karate and stuff like that. You're still not, you're saying I'm not a superhero. Knowing karate doesn't make you a superhero. So we're in the same boat. I have brains, you have brawn, and we both have no powers without our stuff. So why are you attacking me, Vixen?
Well, it's because JSA people were looking down on our Legends of Tomorrow people.
I know, but it was such a faulty argument. I was like, it's ridiculous. But then there's some fun stuff, and I love... Oh, and the other thing was, like, the way Adam couldn't Heil Hitler. I'm like, you're undercover, brother. Nobody's going to think you're a Nazi. Like, that's the whole point of being a spy, is, like, you have to do things you don't like.
Well,
sometimes.
And that's the thing. He's not a good spy.
Well, no, he's... Really? I'm like, he couldn't just, do, like, you know, like...
It,
you know, like,
it was a
do it.
I really liked the scene. It was very funny.
It felt
to me like that could have very easily been in, like, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and no one would have batted an eye.
It was, but it was fun. And you know what? I don't know if you know this, Joe, but Nazis always make good villains in a show.
Yes.
There's not a lot of, you know, pro when you're watching Nazi stuff.
Well, the Nazis on Hogan's Heroes were lovable scamps.
Yeah, but they weren't that lovable. They weren't that lovable. I know. I love Hogan's Heroes, by the way. Like, that's a whole After Dark someday.
Would that make your Mount Rushmore of best comedies of all time?
It might make them.
I have to listen to After Dark to find out what makes it.
Right.
How's that for a segue?
Ugh.
So I like this just fine. However, Todd, you mentioned, I said we'd get to it in a second, the juiced up Nazi, the gassed up Nazi. Those were some dubious special effects.
Okay, question.
Go ahead.
What was more dubious special effects? The giant Adam from last season?
Oh, boy.
Or the juiced up Nazi?
Okay. There were parts where the giant Adam last season didn't look terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Every shot of the juiced up Nazi looked terrible. Because it was in daylight. And when you have a special effect like that, it always works better with a little bit of darkness thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are in the brightest of bright days, and let's get all the light on this giant terrible CGI made for TV budget character, and it really just took any sort of seriousness or threat that was being posed in this episode out for me, because it just looks so dumb and so terrible.
I think the only way that effect really would have worked would have been if it was at night during an eclipse, during a rainstorm, at the bottom of a coal mine, during a blackout.
Oh my goodness.
And that effect would have looked okay. The other thing that I had was I loved all the JSA, but Dr. Midnighter, or Dr. Midnight. I'm saying Midnighter because I'm thinking of Apollo and Midnighter. But Midnight, Dr. Midnight is the is worse than Magenta acting.
Oh yeah?
He was just like, we have to do that. I'm like, you're not even trying, like, do a Batman voice, do something. I don't know. It was so stone-faced. It was actually terrible.
I get you that he was a bit stoic.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was like fifth guy down on that team,
mm-hmm.
it didn't bother me as much as the lead of the Flash TV show.
Gotcha. But I enjoyed it. Yeah. I know I was down on it, but seeing the JSA do stuff was pretty cool. I would like to see more members, and how Jay is not a part of it, I'll never know.
I will say this, I thought this was the best of the entire run that White Canary was.
Yeah, I like White.
Right. Like, most episodes, I find her to be bothersome. I find her to, like, her backstory to be, you know, like, you gotta know too much about Arrow.
Her backstory's very busy.
Right. You got, like, she's making all these mistakes to kill that dude last episode. But, like, she was awesome in this episode. She was a leader. She kicked a lot of butt. She had good scenes where she acted very well. I thought this was a star-making performance for White Canary in this episode.
Emmy award worthy?
No.
Oh, okay.
Let's not go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's for Netflix original series, and, you know, other TV shows that are on real cable, not whatever the CW is.
That's right, real cable.
Like HBO.
Westworld.
All right, there you go. Or AMC, because we're going to talk about the Season 7 premiere of The Walking Dead.
Hmm.
It was
okay.
Todd, I'll let you take the reins on this one.
It was okay. Let's move on.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to... Oh.
I was just joshing.
Oh.
I thought this, and I don't say this lightly, might be the best episode of The Walking Dead I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. Negan was amazing. People who want to say he's not sweary enough, fine. But you know what he makes up in? Jerkiness. Like, complete and total jerkiness. Who they killed was interesting because they got to have their cake and eat it too with what they did. They had everybody, you know, who are they going to kill? Who are they going to kill? Who are they going to kill? And then they do what they do and end up killing two people?
We've given enough lead. We could talk about it.
No, I was trying to build up suspense.
Okay.
I'm sorry it failed. But we end up killing two people through the show. You fool. You get to have your cake and eat it too by killing the person that's killed in the book and killing a person who's already dead in the book, who somebody else died the same way they did. So they kill Abraham early on to fool you, and then they end up killing Glenn because Daryl does something, so you think they're going to kill Daryl. And the tension in all of that was amazing, and then when Negan takes Rick for a ride with his hatchet, you're like, this is going to be all over. Then they come back and he threatens Carl's arm.
Oh my goodness. With it. Okay.
Oh my God. I'm like, you have enough heat here to last forever. You don't need to build anymore. But they are going to.
You got enough heat, like, brother.
Mm-hmm.
This was old school territory heat, man.
Well, they are fighting. You came into our area.
Oh, brother.
So the barbed wire bat comes out.
So I was one of those people that did not dig the first Negan appearance. There was just something about it that didn't, you know, I said he should have been a little bit more sweary, whatever. Whatever my thoughts were in regards to Negan
mm-hmm.
from the end of last season, no. this episode, I'm on board. This is Negan. He's a killer. He's such an awesome character. I want to see him fall so hard and get what's coming to him. They set him up as the perfect villain, the perfect foil to everything here. And as you mentioned, they gave him heat. They attempted, and the plan was, we're going to sacrifice whatever badassness these characters have, in Rick's group, including Rick, we're going to sacrifice a piece of it to get Negan over. We made the joke before, to make Negan look strong.
Mm-hmm.
And boy howdy, Negan comes off as unstoppable in this. Like, I don't know how they're going to resolve the Negan issue in this season. I don't know.
I know what you're saying, because it is, you know, in all the scenes that Rick was trying to get better, the better of Negan in the RV, those are all scenes that you just replace Negan with Rick, and he wouldn't be torturing, but somebody trying to kill Rick, like where Rick's being nice to him, and it doesn't work. It's like every trick Rick has, Negan has one more. And it's like, you're like, so Rick can't get the better of Negan. He's like, yeah, grab your hatchet. And he tries, and there's, you know, Negan with the machine gun. And he's like, you got to be quicker, son. And just the way he, like, just the cockiness, the sheer cockiness, where every once in a while he'd be talking to him once he took him out in the RV, and he's like, you know, this and that, it ain't the way. You thought you were all going to grow old together. Well, blah, blah, blah. Now get my hatchet. Like that, just the sheer cockiness of get my hatchet every time was like, you're going to do what I say, and you better learn to do what I say. And Rick still didn't learn, and they take him back, and the whole thing with Carl, I'm like, and the guy who plays Rick as an actor, when Negan says, that's the look I want, Rick legitimately as an actor has that look of, okay, whatever you want. And I was like, and I was breathing heavy as I was watching the episode, but mostly I was watching the episode with my hand up to the TV as they were beating people.
Cause I was
like, wow, that is intense. But I wasn't complaining.
We'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Negan tells Rick to cut Carl's arm off,
mm-hmm.
build up of it. Anyone have a pen? This is going to feel a little bit cold. Now, while all this is going on, and after Negan bashes in the head of Abraham and Glenn, we'll come back to that, all of Rick's group is having this emotional reaction. Some more than others. Even Daryl. Even Michonne. Your hard-ass characters are having this emotional reaction to see this happening. Not Carl. Go back and watch that. Carl doesn't wince. Carl doesn't cry. He's being held down. The threat of his arm being taken off. And I don't want to say that he's cool as a cucumber, but he's got no reaction. And I think that's calculated. And I think that's going to play into something.
What could it possibly play into?
Oh.
Do you think maybe it's just because Carl can't act, though? I'm just kidding. But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But like when Negan's setting up, he's like, cut it at a 45 degree angle so we have something to fold over. We got a good doctor. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God.
It's like, oh, you've done this before.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. So that was, to me, the most tense scene. Because I really didn't know which way it was going to go. And that's what I like, that we're at this part in the show where while they are introducing the familiar elements that we as readers of the comic book know, they're adding in their own flavor, that it's really making us kind of stand up and take notice, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So now we, of course, have to discuss the two grisly beatings.
And one was to me, was more grisly than the other.
I think Abraham got off a little light, to be honest with you.
Yep, but he was taking it like a champ.
That's right. It was that flat top that was absorbing so much.
And you couldn't tell.
Glenn, on the other hand.
Yeah.
Todd, you had mentioned that you had your hand up
mm-hmm.
Over the TV during parts of that. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know that Todd is not an aficionado of the horror, gore genre, the filth, the things that I enjoy.
The gorer, as I call it.
The gorer. I had my hand up as well, Todd.
Did you really?
It was too much for even me.
Oh my, now you're just making that up. You're nope. Mr. Horror aficionado.
It was, I'm a little out of my game, maybe lost a step or two in my horror game. Maybe it was whatever emotional attachment I might have had to the character of Glenn, even though I knew it was coming. It was grisly, man. It mm-hmm. was tough to watch, and every time that I felt the cut coming back that they were going to go to Glenn, I had my hand up.
I'm thinking about it now with the eye popped out and the,
you said it, brother.
And the whole like dent in his head and him trying to talk was freaking me out. And then he gets out, "I'll find you." And I'm like, "No, you won't. No, you won't. You won't find her because your head's going to be paste in about 5 seconds. And then he goes at it, and it's not one swat. It's not two swats. And then there's that one swat when it's almost over, and then just like a splurt of blood comes up. And he does the vampire bat joke. And I'm like, wow. Like, oh boy. I'm done here. Can I take a breath? Can we get a second? So, yeah, I was affected. Let's put it that way.
It was definitely very powerful. Obviously, if you've been following the show along for this long, I did see a lot of people on Facebook on one hand, amongst other social media outlets, kind of upset that they went too far. A lot of other people bragging that like, oh, everyone talking about what happened. I gave up on the show after season 4, and you're just along, you know, to watch him kill off all of his characters, and Kirkman's just doing whatever he wants, and so on and so forth. And I don't know, man. I have such an affinity for that comic, and the TV show's now in its 7th season, and I've really been enjoying it this whole time. And to each his own, man. When I leave a show, I leave it. I don't, you know, come back 3 years later and decry other people for still watching it, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm. And if it is too much for you, don't watch
it. Yeah, don't watch it. Leave it, wash your hands, and just say, I'm done.
Because now, am I not going to watch anymore? No, I don't think that's going to happen. But it's also, I don't think we're going to get a brutality like that for a while. You know what I mean? That right. was just...
That was the hook to get you in for season 7.
Mm-hmm.
We might get a tease of it here and there, but I'm on board. I was excited for this to come back, and this was, you know, one of the things that helped me out for not being able to sleep at night, you know?
Mm-hmm. And at least we had Talking Dead back afterwards.
I don't know what that is, so.
It was interesting.
That's your problem.
But anyway.
All right. Anything else we need to discuss or cover or otherwise?
No, I think we're good.
All right. So that closes out episode 317 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!
Bobby Block.
There's the music. So you know what that means. It's time for Asa to do his Week 8 picks for the NFL. Now, he got 8 right last time. He did really good. We're going to hopefully get first place this time, right?
Yes.
Okay, so who would win? A Jaguar or a Titan?
Titan.
Who would win? A Redskin or a Tiger?
Redskin.
How about a Patriot or a Buffalo?
Patriot.
A Jet or a Bulldog?
Bulldog.
A Lion or a Bull? Choice. A chief or a horse?
Chief!
Now this is a tough one because This one is the Oakland Raiders, which are a pirate, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are also pirates. Who do you think would win? The Raider Pirates or the Buccaneer Pirates?
The Buccaneers.
Okay. How about a Seahawk or a Saint?
Seahawk.
A Cardinal or a Panther?
Cardinal.
A Charger or a horse? A Bronco.
Charger.
All right. A Packer or a Falcon?
Packer.
An Eagle or a Cowboy?
Cowboy.
Cowboy. And last, a Viking or a Bear?
Bear.
A Bear. All right. Those are Ace's football picks. Anything else you want to tell everyone listening out there? Hundreds of people listen to this.
Blah, 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 blah.
Did you want to sing any songs?
No.
No? All right. Thanks, everyone.
Ah!
Look at how big that was.